special day at the ballpark today. It is Buster Posey Day. The Giants try to break that five-game losing streak and 7 of 8 to a very good St. Louis Cardinal team, at least defensively, bullpen-wise, pitching-wise. They don't hit that much, but they hit enough to beat the Giants the first two games of this series. Let's bring in Bruce Jenkins of the Chronicle. Bruce, how are you today?
Doing well, Marty. Thanks. How are you?
Yeah, very well. It's one of those special days. This is what makes baseball baseball. When they can honor someone at the ballpark, it goes, you know, Lou Gehrig, Willie Mays, I don't care who it is. When you have your day at the ballpark and they honor you, you want to be there to see it. It's a day you'll never forget. And I think it's really, really appropriate for this guy.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. You know, the Giants, they always do these things so well. You know, Mario Elioto to Larry Bear, all the way down. When it comes to honoring people, a special day, you know, they send out the invites. They get all the right people there. It's just, it's so classy. And, of course, you know, Buster, if anyone from the last 20 years deserves anything like this, it's him. And it should be very special.
You know, I was thinking about it. Number one, you want to get there early today because the Warriors, right, Bruce? Aren't the Warriors playing around the same time?
They play at 5:30. So yeah, that could be a little bit of a conflict there, but quite a doubleheader. I'm going to be. I'm not sure which one we're watching live and which one we're taping, but we'll figure it out.
Yeah, this is a good sports day in the Bay Area today.
Yeah.
But for Posey, I was thinking about the Hall of Fame status because it's always sort of attached to him. I want to get your thoughts on, you know, the evolution of how we look at Hall of Fame voting, numbers and things like that, because here's a team that really dominated the 10 through 20, so to speak, with three World Series titles. You need some Hall of Famers somewhere, and maybe he's the guy, no matter how many years he played, no matter how many hits he got.
Yeah, he's definitely the guy from the championship years, and I think that's going to increasingly be in his favor in terms of the Hall of Fame when people really start to realize what happened while he was here, because none of those three teams was regarded as any kind of powerhouse in, like, you know, August of that season. even in 2014, I think people, you know, doubted if the Giants could really do it again, and you know, are they really that good? And they always proved to be that good, and they always peaked at the right time. The pitching was always there, and there you had Buster Posey, you know, the master orchestrator, and getting big hits along the way. I've never wavered on his Hall of Fame status. I was 100% behind him all the way until, you know, when he had the hip surgery and came back and didn't look so good. A lot of people were doubting him, and I thought, well, geez, is he really qualified? But then he came back with the big year, and I started to think about the big picture for Posey, and you know, he really had the total package. He won a batting title. He was MVP, Rookie of the Year. But more than anything, just the presence that he had in the clubhouse, the leadership that he showed, really kept that team tight and together on the same page. And you just don't find those qualities every day.
No, you don't. And I agree with you. The numbers, you can throw out the numbers on this one.
Yeah.
Because he was that important to a team. I saw, you know, I looked up some of his records. 58 playoff games, and they only lost one series, and that was the heartbreaker in the ninth inning to the Cubs. But other than that, they won every other series with him behind the plate. So that's something as well. But look, Yadier Molina is in the ballpark. To me, he's a Hall of Famer without a doubt. I think he easily becomes a Hall of Famer without any discussion. Pujols is in the ballpark as well. You got Wainwright there and Buster Posey. It's kind of an interesting day.
Yeah, it is. Well, I've felt the same way about Yadier Molina for many, many years, and he and Posey being the great catchers of their generation, which I think is very relevant too. You know, who were really the main guys at that position over that 15 whatever year period? Yadier Molina is a total leader behind the plate, really influential guy. He has massive big hits all through his career, and the same kind of player. Pujols, you know, he goes in yesterday. I mean, good grief. His stats are truly ridiculous when you look at him. Even if you remember him as a really special hitter, you take a look at those numbers from St. Louis, it's like, good grief. You know, this guy, mm-hmm. you forget about that. He's with the Angels for too long, really, and his foot was bothering him, and still a great player. But what he did there completely iced it for him. And yeah, I think Wainwright has a pretty good shot. I know the Cardinals certainly feel very strongly about that. Certainly, I wouldn't put him in the category of these guys we've already talked about as far as sort of a surefire thing. But he's a big, big winner and a class act.
And he's not done yet.
No, exactly. He could be in the World Series this year, for all we know.
Yeah, which brings me to the Cardinals. Your take on the Cardinals, this series in particular, and maybe what we saw on the mound from the Cardinals.
Well, yeah. I mean, the way they come at you with their bullpen, my goodness. I mean, it's a trend all around baseball, but you've got to have it. The Giants hope that they have it. They have it a lot of the time. The Cardinals have had it most of the time. But I just I really, really like the team. When you get Goldschmidt and Arenado, Tommy Edman was huge last night, the kid from Stanford. Tyler O'Neill, you know, looks like he could lift a Volkswagen, probably toss it over somebody else's Volkswagen. And is a heck of a player, a Gold Glover, a good hitter. Harrison Bader, you know, with the hair on fire, and Yadier Molina. I really like their roster. I think they're going to give Milwaukee a good run in the Central.
Yeah, the defense is, for me, I mean, there was
a
ball
tremendous.
Hit.
Yeah.
How about the ball hit down the line that got past Arenado late in the game, and Estrada couldn't go to second.
That was amazing.
Yeah, that was, you know, their defense really showed me something. I thought Alex Cobb last night was just terrific. Now, the Cardinals are right-handed. We know that. Very right-handed, and Cap was pointed that out a billion times. But Alex Cobb threw 17 of 19 first strikes, and he had 19 swings and misses. I watched some games, the pitcher has two swings and misses.
Yeah, he came out. He was exceptional. I mean, talk about that. That was the most encouraging thing that happened, because he looks like he's just right back, you know, without missing a beat. And, you know, let's face it, the Giants are going to hit better than they have been lately. But they're going to, whatever they're going to do is going to ride on the pitching. And if he just needs to stay healthy, because his arm is obviously as good as it's ever been, really, maybe better. So, yeah, that was fantastic.
Now, Jelly has been sent back to the minor leagues today. Belt is back. I was asking Susan Slusser about it. I said, no one's seen him. Well, he showed up today. He's off the COVID list, and he's back. Leon is back. Vossler, who had a key walk last night. I mentioned earlier in the show in that two-run rally to get things going. But my point is with Jelly. Look, the guy's 6'11 and a half, and as I said to Susan, he's not Randy Johnson. He's not going to scare you half to death. He's sort of over the top, and here it comes. I want to get your take on Sean Jelly. 6'11 and a half. He's taller than John Rauch, okay? So he's claimed the title.
Yeah, well, he looked to me like a bit of a slinger.
Yeah.
Not sidearm, but he's got a slinger's motion.
It's like an iron mic, like the pitching machine.
Yeah. And you hope he has the consistency of a pitching machine. Sometimes a slinger with the release point can vary a little bit, and you lose your command. But that's certainly not an indictment of anybody. But you know, it's he had a 1-2-3 inning. It's kind of a shame he's going right back to the minors. He doesn't get to go on the road and realize really how well big leaguers are treated as opposed to the minor leagues. But you know, obviously he'll be back, and it was a great little burst of confidence for him. And it's good to know he's down there and can come back.
You know, the ball is clearly not flying as much as it did in other years. There's no question in my mind. Now, we've only seen 26 games. We've got another 136 to go. We haven't seen the summer yet. We haven't seen the ball fly out of Comiskey there in Chicago where it flies. But it looks like the humidor, whatever they've done in their own factory, they make these baseballs. They've done something. So it made me think about this, and that is the launch angle swing. Launch angle swing may not be the swing to have now. It may be more Luis Gonzalez use the whole field, Freddie Freeman use the whole field. Maybe baseball is changing.
Well, that's always been the way to go for me is a good level swing, you know, and get some good underspin on the power, with a little bit of uppercut to it, you know, Ted Williams and all that. I'll tell you what, though, Marty, this thing about the ball not carrying is a farce in a lot of ways. You watch quick pitch every night,
yep.
Balls are getting hit hard. They look like they're going to be homers. They are homers, and they're going off, you know, restaurants and upper decks and scoreboards. Come on. This is not happening everywhere. Balls are hitting, bombs are being hit still. And of course, you know, quick pitch, it's like one after another. You're seeing all the home runs and you're not seeing the rest of the game. But to think that the ball is that dead where balls aren't leaving the yard is a farce.
Well, we'll see. I mean, Jock Peterson, Crawford, Yastrzemski.
It's Freddie a California Freed. Thing. It's Dodgers.
Yeah, maybe,
we know. I mean,
maybe.
What's happened here is not is also valid. I mean, in Dodger Stadium and here, yes, things are balls that are jolted or are not going out. That's for sure. But I'm just saying, elsewhere, that's not the case. And I just saw a note on the internet where Eric Chavez thinks he's heard that the MLB will supply livelier balls for certain games, like nationally televised games.
Yeah.
And, I mean, hell, I saw Ronald Acuna hit a 450-foot shot as he was falling down last night.
Yeah, it's interesting. Maybe you have a point there. Maybe it is something with the weather in California. I'll tell you, the guy who's not having trouble hitting it out in California is Manny Machado. And I'm going to
exactly.
say this early, and I said this to you 2 weeks ago. This guy is going to be the MVP of the league this year.
Right now, he definitely is. No doubt in my mind. You know, the Dodgers have all these guys, and they all could qualify one way or another. But even when Tatis comes back, and that'll be a great thing for the Padres. But Machado, everything he does out there is just so memorable and MVP like. You know, he's such a great player, and it's all coming together for him. And it's great because you know they need him right now. They don't want the Dodgers to get too far ahead of them. And really, you know, we've talked about this division, Marty. The Giants and Colorado and Arizona are all within like a game and a half of each other. I mean, everybody's got a winning record in the division. I mean, there's three teams with losing records in the Central. But the West has all been pretty good. Even those so-called downtrodden teams are right there with the Giants. So the Giants have got to be careful here.
Yeah, they do. They're only a half a game ahead of Arizona. Dodgers already won today behind Kershaw. They beat the Cubs in the first game 7-0. So I saw it now. If steam came out of your ears on the home run thing, I imagine steam came out of your house when Urias was pulled after 65 pitches on Tuesday.
Well, yeah, always. I hate to see a guy lifted when he's cruising. I didn't see that game. I always like to see what it looked like the last few pitches that he threw if a couple guys hit rockets, or he was 3-0, or
no, he was in complete control.
Yeah. So I mean, for me, a guy has got to get in trouble, unless for some reason he wants out of the game, which never happens. I want to. If he's completely cruising, he's got to go back out there. Why would you disrupt that?
Well, this is what Dave Roberts said he's going to do. They want to develop the parade of bullpen guys, like the Giants have done, and like some of the teams have done. That's his goal. So if it's Gonsolin being pulled out or Kershaw coming out early and this kind of stuff, he wants to develop that bullpen, and that's what he's trying to do.
Yeah, and Trinan's been out, and he's still having trouble. There's no guarantee when he's going to come back. He's probably going to be their main guy, their closer down the stretch if he's healthy. And with him out, they want to see what else they've got out there. But, you know, to me, anytime you get a starter into the seventh or eighth inning, or, you know, heaven help, he completes the game, you save a little bit on those arms. You don't have to parade him out there every night.
Well, that's what they're trying to do, and you can't argue with the success. As I was looking at the schedule, they're 17-7 right now. San Diego 18-9. How about Colorado? They're coming back to earth a little bit. They come in here next week. They have always had trouble here. And I always used to joke about it. You know, if the Giants needed a prescription from the doctor, we need to feel better. He would write down, have the Colorado Rockies come in. You'll feel better. And they come in for three here. Yeah.
And they had Arenado then. He would do about the only damage you'd ever see from them. They don't have many more, of course, but they got Blackman and, you know, Connor Joe, who's a very for-real-looking hitter and everything else. But they are doing well. And you know, if the Giants are going to hover around 500, they're probably going to see the Rockies right around there with them.
You know, you brought up Blackman. Interesting. You know, he is a guy who's now endorsed a betting site, not on baseball that way, but he has done it. Other teams are now making deals with Caesar's Palace and all that. Does this change your opinion? Number one, what you think about that, number one. And number two, change anyone's opinion on Pete Rose because of this?
Well, it's one thing to... You know, to cast your fate with a betting site on distant locales, and it's another thing to be managing a team and betting on your team or God knows maybe against your team. We don't know exactly what he did, but we do know he was a betting man as a manager on things that were happening in his game. So that's a different thing to me. To me, that you know, that was him as a manager and not as a player. Nothing could ever talk me off Pete Rose being a Hall of Famer. He's like, he'd be the first guy I put in, okay? I mean, mm-hmm. he really would. He'd be right there. You know, Jackie Robinson, Willie Mays, Pete Rose, you know, absolutely. But in terms of players putting their hand in the gambling scenarios, this is kind of where we're heading, and it's just starting. You know, you'll be watching an NBA game, and all of a sudden they split the screen, and Charles Barkley and Kenny Smith are talking about some over/under thing. You know, and it's become acceptable now. The pro leagues are going to bed with the DraftKings and whatever else, and it's just starting. I've never gambled like in the slightest. I wouldn't even bet gamble a dime in Las Vegas, or maybe I'd stick a quarter in an old slot machine. But so I don't understand the obsession, but it's obviously a huge thing. But it's tricky because, you know, once players start thinking, well, maybe I can slide in, you know, some bets on my own team or whatever, something nefarious, something that's just not cool, that's bound to happen. You know, it's like an NBA ref going rogue, you know. It just takes one, and all of a sudden it's like, wow, what do we got here? Well, gambling is always a big threat in pro sports.
It's like the guy in the football, that Ridley, you know, and he was on the injured list, and he bet on other things, you know. He wasn't playing, you know.
Yeah.
And they slammed the guy for a year.
Yeah, well, the compulsive gambler is a dangerous cat, I'll tell you that, whoever he or she might be.
Interesting. Baseball's always been very careful, going back to the, you know, the Black Sox scandal when the White Sox threw the World Series in 1919, which was rampant at that time with all sorts of rumors of players throwing games. But I don't like it. I don't think I don't think a player should be doing it. I really that's just my opinion on it.
Totally
this question
agree.
Was asked to me last night by Adam Copeland, and I'll ask you this. I don't know how you define a golden era, but what is the golden era of San Francisco Giants baseball? And going back to 1958 and, of course, the five Hall of Famers and everything that happened after that, what would you say is the golden era of Giants baseball?
Well, it has to be 2010 to 14 if you're talking about San Francisco. I mean, when they came out here, 58 to 68, say that was a golden era for the National League, and will always for me be the definitive golden era in baseball, because that's when I was, you know, in high school and all that. It's kind of what you grow up with. People older than me are going back to the 40s and 50s, mm-hmm. and people right now, you know, they might talk about they'll definitely talk about, you know, those three World Championship teams for the Giants. They don't know from the 60s, but in terms of the players on the field, that was a golden era that the Giants may never match. I mean, they are so far from Mays, McCovey, Cepeda, Felipe, Alou, Harvey Keene, and the Alou brothers. It's just comical. But as well as you know, Marichal and Gaylord Perry, Hall of Fame pitchers, but they never won it. You know, they got to the 62 series. It's just how good the league was then. So I think. Sentimentally, you know, I have no problem with their first few years here, but it has to be winning three titles in 5 years. That's pretty darn golden for me.
Yeah, I would think so. And the 60s, they had a different manager every 2 years, which also was very unsteady for the ball club. But my answer was, I said I would go back to Brian Sabian. Once he got here, the Brian Sabian era changed Giants baseball, which led right into 2010. But if you look at what he accomplished from 95, whenever he got here, 96, right up to 2010, they had a lot of playoff teams and a World Series team.
Absolutely. You know, heartbreak losses to the Mets and the Marlins and the Angels. They were a constant factor. That's true. I mean, you could call it the Brian Sabian era, and there wouldn't be really any argument at all.
Yeah, that was my answer on it. So,
yeah.
And look, I know the Hall of Fame's got new committees. We'll talk about that maybe next week when we both can read a little more about it. But they are going to have every 3 years one committee that is just going to look at executives and umpires and contributors. And I hope Sabian gets a look. I really do. I don't know
Definitely.
If he will, but I think he deserves it.
Yeah, John Shea and I have both written about that. One of the great baseball minds, and he was always really, really behind the scenes. He was like the anti George Steinbrenner. You couldn't really find him. He might be lurking over there at the edge of the dugout, but which was just fine with him. And you know, he did a lot of great work with the Yankees. You know, he was in player development when they had, you know, brought up Jeter and Posada and all those guys and built that team. He was a very, very major contributor behind the scenes of that. And you know, he came out here and built a team so smartly in so many ways and hired the right people, you know, got Bochy in here.
Look at the managers he got.
Yeah, oh yeah. You know, Felipe was a heck of a manager. The whole package of it, that the Giants more often than not, the fans knew that this was going to be a fun year. They're going to be in it. And that's, you know, that's what you want.
Yep, I put him in. He's my golden era, and I put him in the Hall of Fame. I hope when that committee meets every third year, and they don't have to consider baseball players. It's just the, you know, the others. You get Eddie Montague in as well. I hope that happens. So we got plenty of time to talk about that. On a historical note today, I know the fans were excited that we were going to talk about this, and you got to go back to 1959 and a very special night at the Coliseum, again, honoring a player. And it's like the Posey thing today, not as dramatic, but Roy Campanella Day in 1959.
Yeah, well, actually, it was pretty damn dramatic to have been there with 93,000 people all lighting a match. Mm. And you wonder, where'd they get the matches? Well, everybody was smoking then. No problem. Everybody's got a match. 93,000 people, they turned off the lights in the stadium, and 93,000 people lit a match. You know, it's funny, to me, and I'm a kid in L.A. then, they're still at the L.A. Coliseum, that's how they got 93,000 people in there, but that was the first great moment of the Los Angeles Dodgers. They moved out in 58, and you're thinking, geez, they got Duke Snider, Carl Ferrillo, Gil Hodges, Pee Wee Reese, Carl Erskine, Clem Labine, Don Newcomb, and those guys were all in the 1958 team, but they're all 100 years old. They finished seventh. And 59, they wind up winning the whole thing. They were seventh, the first team to finish seventh. It was an eight-team league, and win the whole thing the next year. But this was early in the season, 59. Campanella had been in a terrible car accident that left him paralyzed, and they're honoring him at Dodger Stadium. The Yankees are in town for an exhibition, which made it even more classic. They're the defending world champions, and 93,000 people show up, and Pee Wee Reese wheeled Campanella out of the dugout toward a pitcher's mound as people lit their matches in the darkness. And there's a tremendous album, Marty, you've probably heard of it. It's called Dodgers 59 with some of the great calls of Vin Scully. This is what he said as I wrote it down last night. Roy Campanella, for thousands of times, made a trip to the mound to help somebody out. A tired pitcher, a disgusted youngster, a boy who perhaps had his heart broken in a game of baseball. And tonight, on his last trip to the mound, the city of Los Angeles says hello to him.
Well, but Vin was the best. The best.
Yeah, he really
Campy,
was.
Campy was, you know, three-time MVP, 1957. Got into a terrible car accident, car flipped, and he was paralyzed. But he was one of the beloved players of Major League Baseball, a Negro League catcher at the age of 15.
Yeah.
15 years old.
At the time of his accident, you could make an argument he was the most potent hitting catcher in history for power. The only catcher who had more career homers was Yogi, who played with the Yanks at the same time. But he had a lot more at-bats than Campanella. But, yeah, I mean, he was a very, very special guy and extremely well-liked, and that it all came together that night in the exhibition game.
Beautiful, beautiful. Hey, two things I want to mention. One is Sam Spear. Today's Kentucky Derby Day, and we lost Sam, of course, a few months ago. Great horse racing expert, and I know you enjoyed him. And also Mr. C, Howard Cosell in Heaven, passed away yesterday, and he was a great entertainer, Ernie Orozco. So I just want to mention those two to you.
Well, yeah. I mean, a couple of real institutions there. I always wished I knew anything about horse racing, so I would have loved to listen to Sam Spira and actually know what he was talking about, which I didn't. But he was a big, big baseball fan, and loved to talk about things in great detail.
Yes.
And he would come up with an example of something. If you were arguing something one way, he could come at you with something from the flip side that he really would make you stop and think, or he would reinforce what you're saying with something that you hadn't thought of. He really got deep in his baseball or anything in life conversations. Just a very committed individual, you know. And Howard Cosell, I mean, my favorite partnership was the blustery Howard Cosell, who thought he knew everything and really got exposed a lot of the time, but was a huge, huge presence. And Don Meredith in the Monday Night Football booth, having a little cocktail, maybe breaking into song. You know, turn out the lights, and here's Howard Cosell. I mean, what an awesome pairing of individuals there. Mm. But Howard Cosell was a giant, and you know, everybody kind of resented him in some ways. But he kept. I don't think a lot of people turned him off either. He was extremely knowledgeable. Real big boxing guy. You didn't want to question him there. Baseball, not quite so much. But he was a giant.
Yeah, he was. And Mr. C, Ernie Orozco, great entertainer, impersonated him forever. And he was on with Gary Radnich all the time. He came on our show all the time. And
sure.
Very courageous man. His life.
Yeah, we've all done Cosell impressions, but you got to do it right or don't do it at all.
No,
right?
Ernie was the best.
Yeah.
He was the best.
Yeah.
All right. Boy, what a nice discussion. Okay, we'll talk to you tomorrow morning. Thanks, Bruce.
Okay, talk to you then, Marty. Thanks a million.
Okay. All right. That is Bruce Jenkins. All right. Coming up, she has returned. Carmen Q is back, and we're going to talk some baseball with Carmen right after this on the Sports Leader.